You're listening to 1001 Album Club, where every episode we discuss a different album from Robert Emery's book, 1001 Albums You Must Hear Before You Die. So we'll be talking about Lloyd Cole and the Commotions, Rattlesnakes. In the room, I have Rob.
Hey, friendo.
And on the line, I have Kyle.
Well, hi.
Rattlesnakes is the debut album by the British group Lloyd Cole and the Commotions, released on the 12th of October, 1984. The producer was Paul Harmonen, and the genre is indie pop. And I'm going to read from All Music Review, Stuart Mason. One of the finest debuts of the 80s and possibly the defining album of the whole UK indie jangle scene that also included Prefab, Sprout, Aztec Camera, and dozens of other bands. Lloyd Cole and the Commotions' Rattlesnakes is a college rock masterpiece of smart, ironic lyrics and sympathetic folk rock bass melodies. The Glasgow-based band has a level of interplay remarkable in a group that has been playing for less than 2 years, and for all the attention given to Cole's hyper-literal lyrics, the album's finest moments are things like the slinky interludes between the rye verses. Cole's low-pitched and surprisingly soulful voice flirts between earnestness, compassion, and arch derision, while his lyrics sketch incisive character studies filled with smart and funny one-liners, near obsessive name-dropping and references to enough novels and movies for a semester-long pop culture class. In less skilled hands, this would have been unbearably pretentious, but Cole's sly sense of humor and self-mocking wit keep things on the right side of ambitious. Rattlesnakes is a classic. All right, what do we think of Lloyd Cole and the Commotions' Rattlesnakes?
I think that if this had been an American release, we wouldn't be talking about it.
I don't know about that. I know you think that, but and I know we're getting a lot of British stuff, but there's something a little more going on with this record than I first gave it credit for.
Okay.
I thought the same thing when I first listened to it, and I thought, actually, you know, this does have a little bit more of the jangle. It's inventive. It's not a perfect record. It's not the debut I think everybody thinks it is.
Have the Smiths started yet? Is this predating the Smiths?
It's right there.
It's right there. Okay, because just like we just listened to Rattlesnakes, and that little
yes,
like I don't know if Morrissey's copping or if he's copping or if everyone's just like doing that. At the same time, I want to from the jump, but that's a hot take it's not a hot take, but I will say there's a lot of good stuff happening here and it's enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I find myself going, oh, this is what inspired this. Oh, this is what inspired this. Oh, this is what inspired this. Like I'm able to pick out the bands that he's kind of copying.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the first time this is the first album where I've heard that, like, and it's all I've been noticing. Like it on further listens, I've been able to enjoy the music a little bit more. That first time through though, I was just like, oh shit, really?
Yeah. Yeah. It has the, I mean, what would you say? Sophistopop. It has the elements that we've really been getting into, the indie jangle. I mean, we got REM. We're going to get the Smiths. I looked a little bit ahead and just, I don't know if we needed this band and Prefab Sprout. Prefab Sprout's fine and this band's fine. Like House Martins. You know, like
Do you know Prefab Sprout aside from the spaced reference to...
just from this book.
Hot dog, jumping frog, Albuquerque. Like, that's the only song I know from that band because of the show Spaced.
No, just from this book.
Was Soft Boys Jangle Pop?
I would say close, yeah.
Would you consider this the first of the Jangle Pop then? The way the write-up had it?
I mean, we're right there. There's a lot of bands doing this at the same time. REM, like I said, REM. I don't want to get into semantics so much of the first, but there were a lot at this time.
And is the jangle the 12-string guitar I'm hearing?
I mean, Echo and the Bunnymen has a little bit of this element riding through it too.
Okay. I'm getting lost
in the jangle of what that means. Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like a Birds inspired. So you hear a little bit of sweeping melodies.
Maybe and that's why my back's up. I didn't really like the Birds either.
Yeah, your hackles are up. Yeah. Is that what you mean? Yeah. Yeah, it has a little bit of 60s flair, like, in there where they do interludes. You know, it's the picking that has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
And then there's usually a steady backbeat behind it. Has a little bit of a Beatles vibe, you know. And we talked about that with sound effects, with the jam. I mean, that had a jangle riding through it.
Yeah, but I really like that record.
This obviously has a little bit more. I mean, he obviously worships or really respects Bob Dylan.
And Lou Reed.
That second song was straight up a Velvet Underground.
I just wrote next to it, I wish I was listening to Lou Reed. Kyle, I'm hogging the mic. Tell me what you think about this.
You know, I like this record. It took a little bit to get into it. It's clever. It's a little, I wish I had a little more teeth, but it reminded me of the Triffids. You guys ever listen to the Triffids?
No, I know.
I can't remember, Rob, if you ever got into that band. The Australian band?
Yeah, I have listened to the Triffids based on you in 99. That band that came through in 1999 at our house.
Yeah, and I think they were called 99.
They were called 99. It's a fact. It was the old drummer from Sleater-Kinney.
They gave me a haircut and a Triffids record.
And I gave them a sparkly blue bass drum. And that drummer smelled like armpits.
Yes. Yeah, I like this record a bunch, but I don't love it. I think, Birch, you said it was college rock?
Yeah.
Because I'm just imagining these guys like writing these songs like underneath a golf course, God, I guess.
Yeah, that's where they wrote them.
I'm like, is this the UK, like, Hootie and the Blowfish? Like,
yeah, no, you make a very good point. This does feel like that in their context. I mean, not to compare again to REM, but REM's like huge in the college scene, right? At this point, they have not blown up. They're still tightly knit in that scene, and they're just now getting sort of recognition. And I feel like this is a similar element where they're very clever. They have melodic tunes, you know, and they have this debut, and I think it's a very good debut.
Yeah.
It's just that it's not... We've gotten so many debuts, like Jimi Hendrix. Like, how do you even fathom like making it a debut like that, or you know, The Who, or something like that? You know, he's doing a very good job. It's just not. It rises to a level that is just slightly, you know, down from some of these other artists we've been talking about. So it feels a little less prominent, I guess you would say, in the music sphere, but I hear it, and I think a lot of people are gonna like really like this record.
Yeah,
I have never heard of this band in my life. No. Had you guys?
Nope. No, nothing. And it makes sense. I mean, they didn't have hits after this. Yeah,
they charted all in the U.S. I forgot to look.
No, I don't think so. Top 40. Between 1984 and 1989, the band scored 4 top 20 albums and 5 top 40 singles in the UK. But yeah, this is relatively unknown.
It's not a blip here. Yeah.
No. And I think that bands like this get overshadowed by more popular bands. So like if someone was looking for a band like this, the Smiths are just going to be like right there. And
no, you're
you know,
right. You're right.
People are going to gravitate to that. But it's unfair to, you know, to discount a band just purely by something being similar.
Sure. I hope that a Scotsman or woman will clue us in to whether or not a dad who is the golf master or the head of the country club and the I'm maintaining the country club thing, and a kid in the country club's basement. Is this working class or is this like some fucking weird upper crush shit? And he's I don't know where my ire is coming from about it, aside from I know that unless you're a caddy at a fucking, like, you know, at a country club in the States, it's a very bougie, like, business. He was able to afford a Porta Studio and a DX7 and to record all these things in his basement. And those aren't cheap instruments, but they're not, you know, a Porta Studio is not like, you know, a full-on like studio. So
yeah,
I don't know. I'm just like, my hackles, man.
I know you're imagining some like rich country club kid.
I see tea sandwiches who is being brought to him while he's like noodling on the DX.
Yeah, name like, dropping. I'm going to throw in a James Joyce reference.
And I think that's where I could see people, you know, like you said, being standoffish, because he definitely, this is when you say college rock, I mean, smart. He's well educated, and he's name dropping everyone from like Eve Marie Saint, Greta Garbo, Leonard Cohen to, yeah, Arthur Lee, Truman Capote. You know, it's like all these, has this experience, but it's a literary experience. This does not feel like he has lived in the streets like Lou Reed and Bob Dylan going for the...
And Shane McGowan.
Yeah, like, going for these elements. But at the same time, I think what he is doing is valid and sure. Good.
I'm getting that same, like, metallic taste at the tip of my tongue, the same way I feel about the Strokes.
Okay. Yeah. I get that.
But I don't know if it's deserved in any way, shape, or form, because I simply don't understand whether or not.
Maybe this will help you decide. He said between 83 and 84, we went from being a wimpy band who sounded like Style Council to more of a rock band.
Here we go.
Look, this does not sound like Style Council. I don't necessarily think that maybe. I think I enjoyed Style Council more than this. Thank you very much. Get out of here.
Exact opposite.
Ugh, get out of here.
This smoked Style Council.
Jody wears a hat, although it hasn't rained for 6 days. She says a girl eats a gun these days, hey, on account of all the rattlesnakes. She looks like Eve Marie Saint in On the Waterfront. She reads Simone de Beauvoir in her American Circumstance.
It just has something going for it that I think is clever enough for me and interesting enough for me, especially for a debut. I mean, if I got anywhere near this as a debut, I'd be pretty proud of it.
Sure, but you know, one of the 1001 albums you must hear before you die.
That is a different story, yes. And that brings us to the, is this overindulgent in the British pop of the early 1980s, which it does.
Robert Dimmery in his members only jacket, fucking bouncing from club to club, making out with whoever he prefers to make out with, and the soundtrack of his life.
Yeah.
And why are we listening to this?
Yeah.
Because it's not bad.
Yeah.
It's not bad.
This isn't offensive in any way, shape, or form.
It's quite good. I can also imagine like Johnny Ramone giving like Lloyd Cole like a swirly or something. Like it's good, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's very Haircut 100. Let's just put it that way. I mean, that Haircut 100 album, I probably should have just gone negative because it was a wimpy.
I wasn't here for that one either.
Album.
I missed a couple of things.
Yeah.
That and Orange Juice.
Orange Juice is very similar to this too. I guess so? I shouldn't say similar, but it has the same atmosphere. Yes. I mean, Lloyd Cole self-admitted that he, you know, really respected Orange Juice and looked up to them.
Huh,
and they were, you know, sort of an inspiration. And I mean, it's a small, tight-knit group, Scotland. So
this producer, Paul Hardiman,
mm-hmm.
You know what he did as well? And the, we're listening to what song are we on right now? Are we on Charlotte Street?
Charlotte Street, yeah.
Okay, yeah. I was like, Charlotte Street sounds a little bit familiar, and started looking at the producer stuff. He did the Soul Mining.
Yeah.
And this sounds like Soul Mining to me.
Yeah.
But most famously, you know what he's known for? A little song called Lady in Red.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Yeah.
That was
the breakout for Chris D. Berg. And those are the only two things I could find that he produced that
yeah.
made any difference of anything.
No, Lloyd Cole was really excited to work with him because the had just come out, and I mean, everyone was raving about it, and it showed what this type of music, the innovation of using, you know, this
accordions.
Accordions, using drum track, mm-hmm. drum machines and things like that. And how you could make it with a smaller group of people.
Yeah, how many people are in this band?
That's a good question.
And was he, because a dude from the was kind of like, I'm doing everything.
I mean, five are listed on the personnel.
Okay.
So you got guitar, keyboards, bass, and drums.
Yeah. I think for a side two, track one, Charlotte Street's an excellent song.
I agree.
One of the best on the record.
Yeah.
Yeah. I like that song a whole bunch.
Yeah. I get where you're coming, your hesitancy, though, because it feels like, yeah, good, but is it great? You know, it just has that little...
But I mean, all of the British rags are just fucking raving on this thing. Like, Enemy has this listed as one of the greatest records of all time.
What?
All time.
Yeah. Excuse me.
Maybe Robert Smith came out and said that like this was a big old dealy deal.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it highly influential, but like, yeah, I think it has to do with how old you were when it first hit your ears.
Absolutely.
And then the importance that you're like putting on it, like afterwards for this, not every single solitary album in the history of mankind. I still maintain that I Want to See the Bright Lights Tonight is one of the greatest albums ever written. I didn't listen to it until I was 39 or 40.
Yeah.
You know, but this jangly 80s mm-hmm. indie pop,
mm-hmm.
you know, like this isn't going to usurp REM for anybody
right.
who listened to REM nope. first. But feasibly, had you heard this one first, maybe REM wouldn't hit quite as hard.
I don't think the... Yeah.
Bad analogy.
Yeah. Every time I listen to it, though, I'm
You find new things?
I like it more.
Yeah.
I do think it's a bit of a... It grows on you. I do have to get over the pretentiousness of some of the lyrics. And I think that really hurts it. I feel like
he's
if
just
he
having
would,
a laugh.
I know. Just and I cheeky. Get that, but it's really hard to lyrics are really hard, and I think it's great, but it does show a young writer trying to impress.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah. Which is you don't want that. I do have a review that was not so kind. Since you said everyone was raving about it, Melody Maker was critical, believing that, quote, like Orange Juice's Texas Fever and ABC's The Lexicon of Love, Rattlesnakes is an album of cynicism masquerading as romance. It's about past pop's legacy to present rather than love or hate or any of the emotions it feigns. It's about how modes of expression haven't moved on one iota from early Bob Dylan, how a generation bereft of its own voice falls back on playing with the language of its peers.
Damn.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I wish Melody Maker had listened to Double Nickels on the Dime to listen to some new ideas.
Mm.
I mean, he's not wrong. They, or whoever they are, aren't wrong in their assessment. Like, I don't think this is nearly as offensive as like Lexicon of Love.
No, absolutely like not. Yeah.
And do you think if Lexicon of Love had had this jangly like pop thing going behind it, do you think lyrically it would have hit
different? No, those lyrics are bad for me.
Good.
I find those lyrics really bad, but I've read people thinking those or saying those lyrics are brilliant. So I that one has always puzzled me. I would much rather listen to these lyrics any day.
Like I feel like a hill jack.
I feel like
washing myself with a stick.
Duped.
Like, yeah. Because I don't get the brilliance
of this or
no, of ABC. Of ABC.
Yeah, let's talk about.
Yeah, I want. No, I was simply bringing it up because Melody Maker had referenced it.
Sure.
So it works. So this is 2CV.
Mm-hmm.
It's fine.
Yeah, I got to start next to that one.
Yeah. Four Flights Up, I wrote next to it, Bob Dylan should sue.
That is fair.
But Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken? I thought it was fucking great. Patience was good, too. I got to start next to that one as well.
Yeah, the last two tracks I thought were great.
Yeah.
It's true. He just went for it with the Bob Dylan thing.
He sure did, man. Oof. Like, it has me reflecting back on records that I've done and whether or not, like, the influences are so much on the sleeve that, like, am I also a douche? Am I also this kind of asshole? And I just don't know. Like, it's weird. I didn't have any of this crap in my brain before this project started.
Yeah.
I didn't give a toot about a Bob Dylan I like my Lou Reed and everything and Velvet Underground, but like it's weird that now I have all of this stuff in my brain and then I'm hearing these new things and I'm like going, but this and this and this and this and this. And yeah, it just it has me reflecting.
Yeah.
So I because if I am also on that, like, you know, you're showing a little bit of your shit here, like, I don't want to be too mean on this because I didn't mean to, you know?
Yeah. I mean, young writer, young creator.
Yeah.
It's not going to, and that's what I'm saying. A lot of those albums that we listened to didn't get there till people were well and, you know, into their third, fourth album.
Mm-hmm.
This is a debut, which I find pretty remarkable. And I have to give it, you know, I give it some props for that of just coming out of the gate with, you know, some pretty, pretty good songs. Yeah, I really like The Smiths, though. I think that's what is doing it for me for a lot.
Yeah.
It's having a bit of The Smiths element, but just having a little bit of a different take on the sort of genre that they're doing. Like a witty, clever project that you did. It's like it would be the best, like if this were a local group that you were seeing at your college, you'd be like, oh my gosh, they're so, like, this is amazing. They put this out, you know, and they created this. So I feel like it's one of those elements where we can look back next to all the, you know, I'm looking on this page and it's like, Echo the Bunny Man, Tina Turner, like Michael Jackson, and we're kind of in The Replacements and think, you know, like, doesn't really hold up to those. But at the same time, if this came out and it was your friend or, you know, in the same town as you, you'd be like, damn, they did a good job, you know, making that album. I didn't expect that at all.
Well, you might have something. Would you rather not be saved? Here comes my train. I'm on my way. Will you not see? I don't need your sympathy. I won't read your poetry. Oh, sweetness, please. So he just recorded these demos in the basement of a country club, and then he got a record deal.
10 songs within 12 months period. And then, yeah, he showed off some of the songs and they played the songs for, they got a record deal. Yeah, it's kind of...
That's all it takes, guys.
That's all it takes is the right songs.
I feel like the kind of detached, often just ironic and referential lyrics like that kind of scathing review kind of said, I mean, you know, the Smiths, you know, and the Triffids, they have that raw, like, emotion. Like, this doesn't have that.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe Are You Ready to Be Heartbroken? It's starting to come out a little bit. And I still think this stuff's great, but I think that's what gives those other bands kind of the edge.
Yeah. I feel like if this band would have done another year of touring and refining these songs in his, like, some of his vocal performances, I find a little bit so-so. What are we listening to right now? This is
Patience.
Patience.
And I feel like...
Which I like. I like this song.
I like it, but I just, like, feel like he could, you know, give it a little more or something. But this is the style of singing at the time, of having that sort of deadpanned falsetto. And it's like a soul singer that doesn't have the...
A soul.
The deep soul. Yeah, not going for it, you know? It's...
Yeah. It's no Dexy's Midnight Runners. I still like it, though.
Yeah, I mean, I like more songs than I dislike on this record, like, for sure. It's good, and it's worthy of the praise. Like, for a debut record, 100% worthy of the praise. And I have to go positive on that, because it's really well done. But, like, I don't think it's buck-worthy.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a footnote at best. Like, and it could be a lot of people's favorite bands, because their favorite band, they had it in their ears at the exact right time. Doesn't negate the value, though.
Yeah.
So positive. I don't think it necessarily belongs in the book, especially with the, gonna keep fucking harping on it, but with NXS being like thrown to the wolves.
Just
like, I just don't know why I'm listening to this as opposed to them. But yeah, positive caveat.
Yeah, I'm kind of in the same boat where I feel like, great, I'm glad I listened to it. I'm glad I was exposed to it. You know, I might put it on and listen to some of the songs, or I could see myself, you know, putting it on I don't know if I'd ever put on a mix. If it was an early mix of, like, 80s tunes, maybe. If the Smiths are on there, Echo and the Bunnymen and some of that stuff, like Psychedelic Furs, yeah. These songs are pretty.
Charlotte Street would definitely go on to a mix. Yeah. Like that's a standout, like, great track.
Yeah. But I think that, you know, I've expressed it, you know, so far. It's just, it's lacking in being a great record that I could 100% recommend to someone. It's just not there. But good job.
Yeah.
What do you think, Kyle?
I'm going to go positive. I mean, these songs are great. And the more I hear them, it's great stuff. It's good stuff. I don't know if it's great stuff. It's good. It's pleasant. It's clever. Is it essential? I don't think so. But I think it's good. Positive. You know, if you're into the Smiths and you're out of Smiths records, or you don't want to support them anymore, like, put on some Lloyd Cole and the Commotions.
I thought it was interesting, too. There's so many, you know, Aztec Camera, Prefab Sprout, The House Martins, The Haircut 100, Orange Juice, Dexy Midnight Runners. I mean, we're getting all of that.
All of them.
And the Smiths and, you know, some additional stuff. I did think it was interesting that he was talking about Forest Fire. And he said, oh, I loved it. I came up with this epic guitar solo, and Paul and I stayed up all night recording it at 2 a.m. with everything turned up. It sounded incredible, but the next day I thought we'd gone over the top and wanted to take some of it off. Paul said, no, play it to everyone as it is, and everyone agreed it was incredible, so we left it in.
Yeah, on next Forest Fire I have written down for the solo / outro, I guess. It's a great solo.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head, too, with the, who'd you say, Hootie and the Blowfish.
Oh, that's Kyle. Right.
Kyle, I think that is very apt, because it has a jangle, it's pleasant, it's college, you know, radio, you know, there's nothing inherently bad about that, but for us, we got so inundated with that kind of stuff, like...
if you were friends of Hootie, you know, and you go see him, you buy a CD, you'd be like, this guy's should...
Yeah.
This guy should be in a book.
Yeah, exactly. But at the same time,
Dave, man,
I do not want to listen Hooting the Blowfish.
No.
I still want to do a cover of Crash Into Me where we just kick over the Beltry, like, during the chorus. It's still funny in my head. Just the sound of a Beltry falling down is a very funny sound.
Next time we'll be talking about Usur Nadur. Immigrant.
Get me what I want. Get me off my knees. And then we'll burn your house down. Don't it feel so good? It's a forest fire. Every time we get together.